Hi, this is Walter Chase, and you're behind the mic with the SNC Fan Chat.
Wah, 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 Chase.
You're behind the mic with Straight No Chaser.
Official podcast show.
Yeah,
Chase.
You're behind the mic,
Chase.
You're behind the mic for news, interviews, and more.
And more.
You got all the albums, you came to our show. You live on the website, but still you want more. So Shayna, Kathy, Dave, and Tina, ready to go. SNC Fan Chat, time for the show.
Happy holidays, Chasers. This is Shayna.
And this is Dave.
This is Tina. And unfortunately, Kathy couldn't be with us today because she's spending time with her lovely family. But the three of us would like to welcome you to our landmark 10th episode of SNC Fan Chat, Behind the Mic with Straight No Chaser.
Woo!
First of all, we want to wish all of our listeners a Merry Christmas Hanukkah Kwanzaa. Sorry. Wanted to get everything in there, you know. Yeah, okay.
Sing it.
I feel awkward now.
Sounds like the Old Navy commercial.
I was thinking maybe you should sing that Merry Kwanzaa Hanukkah Kwanzaa because.
I don't know how I would do that. But anyway, okay, so we have a jam-packed episode for you today. So much so that we are dividing this episode into two halves because there's just way too much stuff to put into one big, huge episode. So we've cut it into two smaller, I wouldn't say bite-sized pieces because they still are pretty long, but two pretty big-sized pieces. A lot has happened in the world of Straight No Chaser recently since our last episode, and we have another fun interview, which also happens to be our longest interview to date, and we're going to announce the winner of our All I Want for Christmas CD DVD box set giveaway. So all of you listeners out there, get comfy, sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Alrighty. Now, some of you have noticed that we have an all-new theme song written by none other than our interviewee for this episode, Straight No Chaser's fearless leader, Walter Chase.
Yay, Walt!
Woo! We were all so flabbergasted and humbled to hear and he'd written and recorded a theme song for us. We would like to take this time to thank Walt from the bottom of our hearts for doing that for us.
Yes, Walter, thank you. Thank you so much. And Tina said it perfectly. Definitely, I am very humbled at your generosity, your time that it must have taken to record that. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you so much, Walt. And just putting it out to all the listeners out there, I kind of sort of freaked out when I first found out, not going to lie. The people that were in the room when I found out probably thought that I had a third head. They looked at me like I had one, so I don't know. They probably think that I'm pretty crazy now, but it's so worth it. And thank you so much, Walt, for doing that for us.
I'll go ahead and fess up. I'm pretty tough, but I cried. I did. I'll put that one out there. I cried. And, yeah. Now that's been said, we got a real treat for you guys. Here's our interview with Walter. Hope you guys enjoyed this fun interview.
Hey, Chasers, this is Shayna.
This is Tina.
This is Dave.
And this is Kathy with SNC Fan Chat, Behind the Mic with Straight No Chaser.
We are here with none other than Walter Chase, tenor two, SNC's fearless director, fantasy baseball fan, and the guy who successfully knocked SpongeBob SquarePants out of the running for best cartoon character of 2010. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us, Walt.
Hey, thanks for having me. I've been waiting patiently. Even Deke Sharon got a chance before me, so I've been patiently waiting. I'm excited to have a shot here.
All right, so first things first, Walt, you are amazing, measure by measure.
Oh, stop it, please.
No, seriously. Okay, now that I've had my mini freak-out fan moment, how did you become a member of SNC, and how were you introduced to acapella music specifically?
All right. I became a member of Serena Chaser when the group formed back in 1996. Dan was in Singing Hoosiers with myself and the other nine, I guess the other eight, if you Dan, myself, and the other eight. And I met Dan the year prior when we were freshmen. Dan was one of the co-music directors of the Vocal Jazz Ensemble, which is a choir that's part of the Singing Hoosiers, the select choir that Dan and Patrick Hachet, which was one of the original members, they were the music directors. Dan and I had gotten to talking. We had a shared interest of a cappella groups that were at colleges of friends of ours. He had a lot of friends at University of Illinois. I had friends at University of Penn that were in groups that is similar to Straight No Chaser now, but nothing like that existed at IU. So when we came back as sophomores, Dan started putting the group together. I towed the assistant music director to Dan. Dan's phenomenal talent, and it was, you know, fantastic to kind of play second fiddle to him as he was putting everything together. And that's how I became a part of Straight No Chaser. As for a cappella music, when I was in high school, I had the luxury of being in a choir and being mentored by Edward Millicetz, who is the music director at Easton Area High School, former choral director at Easton Area High School. My little brother, John, actually is now the current music director at Easton. So when Ed Millicetz, when I first met him when I was 15, I immediately just knew that I wanted to become a music teacher, and that's why I went to Indiana as a music ed major. M, as we called him, he introduced me to a lot of different vocal groups, some a cappella, some not a cappella, but the groups that he influenced me on, Take Six, the Swingle Singers, Rockapella, Manhattan Transfer, I immediately was smitten, and I wanted to learn everything about all of those groups, and I was most intrigued about the people that were putting the music together. I started taking music theory when I was 14 and started to really, you know, for me, I wasn't the best singer in choir. I wasn't the best trumpet player in band, but I always seemed to latch on to music theory and understanding how the music kind of broke down. And when I was learning those groups, those different groups, the real group, I was magnetized by the music directors in the group. So I really started to, find my niche with a cappella early. And I put together my first group when I was 16. It was a group called Next in Line, which was a pun on Boyz II Men. And Next in Line is actually a song that was written by New Edition. But it was six guys. It wasn't a traditional a cappella group. And even back then, the goal was to sing for girls. And we sang almost every Boyz II Men song and a couple of, we sang Shy, obviously. We sang a bunch of stuff. We weren't very good, but I'll tell you, we had a great time. And that was my first taste of being a music director. And I remember when I was in high school, I said to my band teacher at the time, she was the one that told me to go to Indiana. She said, well, what do you want to do when you're in school? What's your goal? And I said, well, I want to, you know, obviously get good grades and have fun. She goes, no, you should have a goal. And I said, well, I want to be in an a cappella ensemble. Even when I was 17, I knew. And I said, you know, if I can do that for a profession one day, that would be amazing. And the fact that I'm here now is, you know, a testament to anybody who's in high school now that's a big music buff, you know, to know that all you have to do is, well, not all you have to do. Part of what you have to do is you have to believe that you can do it, and you have to set a goal as lofty as possible, and then do everything you can to get there.
Wow. That's cool. So, Walt, what was it like after the original SNC group graduated from IU and the first IU SNC group was picked?
The original 10 did their final performance in April of 1999. And backtracking slightly, we had cultivated a relationship with the IU Alumni Association, and specifically the president of the IU Alumni Association, Jerry Tardy, earlier that year. and his vision, which was shared by ours, but we met, parallel. He was thinking the same thing when he first saw us, was that he wanted the group to continue in Indiana, and he wanted to help. And what the IUAA was able to do was they were able to set up a structure, as in help us write bylaws, rules going forward on how the group would work. And then also financially, he was willing to produce us, to finance us, our CD projects, finance tours to go to different parts of the country. We were in Florida, Arizona, California, all over Indiana, obviously. We would go to Iowa, New York, and he would send us out as student ambassadors to the university. And we would, we would sing a couple songs and then sit around and eat dinner with IU alums and tell them how great of an experience it was to be at Indiana. And obviously for the Alumni Association, they wanted to promote Indiana and show what their students were like. And we would have a lot of fun, and we seemed to be good ambassadors, at least in public. When the group was turning over, I had ambitions of going to graduate school at Indiana. And I got accepted, and the IU Alumni Association, in wanting to keep the continuity of the group going, offered to pay my scholarship to go and be the music director be the music director of Straight No Chaser and also go to grad school, which was an incredible honor. And it wasn't something, it was sort of a one-time thing because they saw how much work was going to go into it. And they said, well, we're giving athletes some scholarships. I think we can make room for Walt here. And they actually offered the same thing to Dan, but Dan was on his way. He wanted to graduate. He wanted to go pursue music professionally. And, so Dan kind of vested the group with me, and it was not too much dissimilar to what happened this past year where, Dan decided to go back to broadcasting. Dan and I have a tremendous amount of respect for each other, and I really appreciate his commitment and his trust in putting the group in not only my hands, but the guy, all the guys hands. But when that original 10 left, we had there was only three guys that were left over: myself, DR, and Randy. No Jerome, no Steve Morgan, none of the big soloists, not even Charlie. It was just Randy, me, and DR. And we had a quite a task because the group at campus, the campus as a whole, all of are a much smaller fandom than we do by means now. But everybody knew what Straight No Chaser was. We'd been together for 3 years. And there was a lot of, people saying it wouldn't be the same, kind of how is it now? When certain guys leave, it's, is it going to be the same? And for us, it was a challenge. DR became the business manager of the group. Randy became much more involved in the marketing, kind of how he is now. And, we brought in seven new guys, actually eight, because Don was one of the eight guys we brought in. But current group members that were part of that transition were Ryan Allwert, Mike Luganville, and Don, those three guys. And there was obviously several other guys that were a part of that transition. And everybody was young. Ryan and Mike were seniors in high school when they made the group. So when they came to school not only as, freshmen in college, but immediately as members of Straight No Chaser. So you can imagine the amount of work they were doing. And, I was tough on them. I knew the level that we needed to get back to musically. And, I was really tough on those young guys, and it was good to have DR and Randy, around to really instill the, expectations and what the camaraderie, the bond that the 10 of us had established that we still, obviously have today. Our friendships have endured from those first 3 years together. And, by instilling that in the younger guys, they immediately saw that it was more about just singing songs. It was really about, the core of the group. And it was a tough time. It was sad. It was sad not to sing with, you know, Charlie and Steve were my roommates at the time, and it was tough to see them go, and I was obviously good friends with everybody. So, you know, it was a change, and it was, and you know, we had a lot of work that we did, and I'm proud to say that I was the second director of the IUAA Strano Chaser Group.
Cool.
Very cool. So what are some of your favorite memories from Strano Chaser in your college days at IU, and what are some of your favorite memories from Strano Chaser with Atlantic Records?
Favorite memories of my college days, I probably shouldn't talk about on the web. I'm just kidding. Well, sort of. My wife is an avid listener to the Fan Chat, so I will say at this point that my most memorable moment of my college days in Indiana was the first moment I laid eyes on my wife, I founded a women's a cappella group at Indiana my senior year. The group still is there today. It's called Ladies First. I would be neglecting to say that I'm almost as proud of that group of Ladies First as I am of Straight No Chaser. Obviously, Straight No Chaser's success has become, you know, a phenomenon, and Ladies First is. But for me, just starting another group and building that from the ground up, and they're good. Like the, you know, it's, you know, you get a lot of, you know, the guys groups, you know, we'll sing with the female groups and the mixed groups occasionally, but you know, it's hard to find, you know, a solid group. And we had two at school where Ladies First and Strano Chaser would do shows, and it was, you know, they're fantastic. But anyway, the first time that I ever met my wife was when she came in to audition for Ladies First, and so that was obviously a great college memory. You know, there's starting Ladies First was another one as well. I did a lot of performing, obviously, in school. But the things that I remember most, that are most memorable, are the times that were spent, you know, just hanging out. You know, freshman year, everybody goes to that freshman year where I was coming from Easton, Pennsylvania. I knew zero people when I went to Indiana. It was a frightening experience. I had a girlfriend that I was dating still back in Easton, and you know, it was that, you know, that first year, you know, kind of really built my character up and also helped me with my confidence to see that at a school like Indiana, which I'd heard so much about the music program, it's a fantastic music school. I felt like I was holding my own there. So just, you know, the experience obviously with the guys, and you know, the times that I had with, you know, meeting my wife and going through everything there, Indiana is and always will be one of the greatest, you know, times in my life. Now, with, the SNC Atlantic group, obviously favorite memories, the moment that I found out that we were going to be signed to Atlantic Records, I was walking home from work. I live on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, and I work down by where the World Trade Center site is. If you don't know Manhattan geography, that's about a 7-mile walk. And I would do that walk 2 or 3 days a week to kind of clear my mind. And, you know, when the weather wasn't terrible, I liked having that where I'd leave work, and my wife would work a little bit later. So I wouldn't need to go work out. You know, obviously 7 miles is, you know, that was about an hour and 45 minutes of walking. And I loved seeing New York by walking up the West Side Highway. Anyway, I would do that a couple times a week. And one day I was listening to the radio, and I ignored my cell phone, and I picked up my cell phone out of my pocket. And I saw that I had 7 calls from Randy, 3 calls from Dan, and about 10 text messages of guys saying, "Have you talked to Randy? Have you talked to Dan?" So obviously I was one of the last people they told. I called Randy, and I called Ben, and I, on the West Side Highway, it was a scream that you could probably hear from, you know, uptown, and couldn't believe it. And I when I saw the text messages, and it took me a while to get a hold of Randy, I was like, well, maybe because of the 12 days video, maybe we're going to be on David Letterman. I thought, you know, if that was all that came for it, like that, which we still haven't for some reason, I don't know, bitter party of one. But we, you know, I thought that would be the greatest thing that would happen. And, you know, then telling us that Craig Kalman had heard this and that it was all going to happen was just fantastic. I was on my way, actually, that day to go see a musical, and I was meeting friends from work. I decided to buy tickets. I skipped the musical. I went straight back down to where my wife was working. I had surprised her at work, and I said, you know, because she's just as much of a Straight No Chaser fan as anyone. Like, she's just a huge fan. She knows all the guys, and she's always been a great supporter. And well, I just went to work. I said, you got to hear this. I told her, and we both just freaked out, like lost our mind. And then we ran uptown. DR was in town, Steve Morgan was in town, Charlie was in town, and the four of us just got together and you know, just we bought some champagne and we just talked about how is it possible that this all is coming back again. So that would probably be, you know, among obviously singing for, you know, thousands of people who, you know, we never had met before or constantly, you know, my favorite memory or my favorite moment of every day is when I go out and I see a full house and cannot believe where everybody is coming from. Like we were singing, the 10 of us were singing in stairwells for rehearsals for 3 months without a performance when we first got together. And I never ever forget that we came from just the 10 of us, you know, having good times. And the fact that we have, you know, there's little kids, you know, that weren't even born when we were first singing together. There's people of all ages, there's families, the things that people say to us after shows about how we've touched them, or they have somebody who is ill and they love us and it hurts that they can't come see our shows. Like, you know, the fan mail, everything that we get. And I can say this, you know, across the board for all 10 of us, it blows us away. And I really hope that that's conveyed. I really hope that everybody knows how much this means to us. And, you know, my favorite moments of Straight No Chaser happen every day. It's not one show or one moment. It really happens every day. And I try to, even when we're on the road and we're all tired, I try to remember that. And even today, when we have two shows here in Raleigh, and we've got another show tomorrow, and it's at the very, very end of our tour, and we're all a little tired. But when we get together right before the show, we say a little prayer, and we all say something to each other to just kind of get us back to that place. So, you know, I am trying to, you know, create new memories every day from my experience with the guys.
Wow, that's cool. Makes me want to cry. Anyway. Anyway, Straight No Chaser's recorded 3 albums with Atlantic Records now. What's the recording process like, and typically how long does it take to make a record?
Okay, on average, I'd say the actual us in studio recording process takes anywhere between 3 to 5 weeks. Now, that will fluctuate whether it's spread over time. With every album, it's different. The amount of rehearsal time has been much different. Last year when we put together Christmas Cheers and With a Twist, we did those in back-to-back months, September and October, and we were on a deadline to finish both of those. And we actually delayed the release of With a Twist so that we could go back in the studio in January to add on a few more songs. The process has changed by bringing in our good friend and fan of the podcast, Deke Sharon, to help us in the studio to keep focused, to have a musical mind who is unparalleled in the a cappella community. And I really hope he's not listening to this because he's going to give me a hard time for giving him so much praise. But Deke is the perfect impartial judge to stand in the middle of the 10 of us. Because imagine trying to win an argument with your sibling. That's the best way to put it. You never, even if mom or dad come in and break up the argument and side one way or another, there's always a feeling of contempt for your brother, for your sibling, and also for your parent for making that decision. So imagine that multiplied by having 10 siblings, having, a very, everybody cares. This isn't some, squabble. This is a song going to be on the album. Who's singing this? Who's doing that? Why is it happening? What's the best way to get about this on a daily basis? And it's nice to have Deke because we trust Deke, and he's good. He knows his stuff. And having him there in the studio from Atlantic's standpoint and from ours is the most streamlined way for us to keep on task and to trust our judgment, which is sometimes the hardest thing to do. So the actual, recording process usually starts several months in advance. There's rumors that we're going to be back in the studio in March recording our next album. So what happens now coming up to this for, months and months prior is constantly the, hey, what about we do this song? Or what if we did this song this way? Or, hey, I really like that we're singing this song every night. This should be on the album. Or the more popular, when we're in the signing line, hey, why isn't this song on an album? Hey, when are you going to record this song? Hey, I just bought the CD and saw that this song isn't on there. Why haven't you recorded it? And then if you get that enough, you realize that that should probably be a song that we're considering to at least try out. The next stage of that is the arranging, which happens one of two ways. One way is Dan, myself, Tyler, Ryan, now Don, we all go into our own little cubby holes and come out with something that we hope will transfer over from paper to the group through rehearsing. When we rehearse now is a question of when can the 10 of us get together? I will say that we will be rehearsing quite a bit when we're in Canada. So if you happen to be a fly on the wall somewhere in Saskatchewan, you're probably going to hear us rehearsing one of the potential album tracks. And another way that we do it, besides writing it down on paper, is when we get into the studio, we will occasionally do something where we pick a day, we pick a vibe and a song, and we go in there with a wrecking crew, and we build it from the ground up. Lay a bass line down, lay a percussion line down, lay a solo down, lay the backgrounds down, and improve it. It's something that we call Grinching a song, because that is the first time we did it is when we did You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch. That's exactly how we did it. Rome had kind of a vibe. We had the song that we wanted to do, and we had no idea how we were going to do it. And that was as collaborative of an effort, all 10 of us saying, hey, what about this one? And it took a long time the first time, and we've gotten a little bit more efficient at it. But that is the actual recording. And then what happens after that is the I don't want to say fun part, but the sexy part, for lack of a better word. Sorry. Because I hope that's not too racist then. It usually requires two or three of us who have ears of steel to sit into a mixing room for 12 to 15 hours a day with our engineer, with Deke, and listening through everything and trying to decipher what should be louder, what should be softer, what should be taken out. Should we cut two or three measures here? Is the song too short? Is the song too long? Is this song going to work at all? Do we need to retrack the solo? That's generally where Jerome will say, hey, I'd like to record my solo for the third or fourth time, just because Jerome is kind of a perfectionist on that. It can be, and that can take anywhere between days to weeks. And that's the thing where usually that's where we're up against the deadline of seeing, okay, we're going to have to do this and finish this before a certain amount of time. So that is the... I guess you could say, I think when most people think about us recording, they think about us just getting in a room and it just being 10 of us around a mic and just, magic just shooting out of our mouths and just, just this symbiotic, just, kumbaya moment. But it's a lot of work. It is a ton of work. And to be honest, the amount of, it's obvious that when we're on the road, you can kind of see that, well, these guys are traveling from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania to Raleigh and doing a show the next day. Okay, that's not very close. You can kind of see that and, tangibly put your finger on how difficult that is. The studio is not much easier. On some days, you've got lighter days than others. But there is, it's a marathon where you start with the basses at 10 o'clock and you end up with the solo done at midnight, and then you've got to come back and do it again the next day. I'm not complaining. I'm not saying I enjoy my life in Strano Chaser. I don't want anyone to make any crybaby noises or anything like that. I'm trying to convey what the recording process is as from our sympathetic standpoint, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So keeping with the theme of recording and whatnot, how are songs chosen for the actual CD? And then which songs are chosen to be performed on tour or like, you know, TV and radio appearances?
Okay. Let me do the second part of that because that's a lot easier. The TV radio performances, and if the guys were in the room right now and they would be piping in, they would be kind of laughing. They would not be laughing, usually we get to a TV station, and unless our manager happens to be there, David Britz, our fearless manager, he's afraid of a couple things. He's afraid of spiders, I think. But when we're at a radio station or at a TV station, it generally goes like this. All right, guys, thanks for coming to our station. We appreciate it. We want you to sing one or two songs. What are you going to be singing? And then there's nine eyes that look at me, and I, you know, I know the moment's coming, so I thought about it for a couple of seconds usually before, and then I'm like, hey, how about I'm Yours, or Wonderwall, or how about Billie Jean, or hey, guys, why don't we try the Gaga medley? So there's no nuclear science to this. It's generally what's sounding good recently, if it's a particular type of stuff, if it's adult contemporary, we'll probably do one song or the other. TV is a little different. Obviously, when Jimmy Fallon asked us to be on his show, there was a specific songs that he wanted done, and we arranged them. And or when we're on Christmas in Washington, there's a set list. When we do local press, when we go to Omaha, Nebraska, and we're singing for the local Fox affiliates, they generally have us sing two or three short songs and a couple of long songs. Mm-hmm. If we're closer to somebody's particular market, like when we sing in Philly, Jerome sings a lot of solos. If we're in Indianapolis, Mike and Ryan sing a lot of solos. If we're in Des Moines, Iowa, Tyler sings the entire thing. So there is a little bit of, you know, we've got 50 or 60 songs that we can pull out any time that we feel comfortable singing. So it is demographically, demographically chosen. The first part, the songs that are chosen, the actual CD, the recording process, once that's done, everything's mixed down. We generally have the entire compiled list of songs, which can range anywhere between the 20s to the 30s. And, all of the songs are our babies. Some of them are the problem child, and some of them are the golden child in different people's minds. There's some people who feel that X song is strong and should definitely be considered, and it's something that our fans will enjoy. And then there's Y song that certain guys in the group are like, I think it's a good song. I don't know if it's going to work, blah, blah, blah. And then those songs get sent over to our good friends at Atlantic Records, and through our work mainly with Craig Kalman, but also with the A&R folks over there, they come back to us with the 12 songs, 14 songs, 15 songs that they think should be on the album. Now, in full disclosure here, we would like to keep our relationship with Atlantic as positive as possible. And at the same time, we feel that eventually all the songs that we record will get out there eventually. We'll get out there in some outlets, whether it being a bonus track or on YouTube, or that we perform live. That, you know, the first time we recorded with a twist, Billie Jean Poison was not a song that was chosen for the album. Now, that would be a much different album if that was the case. But at the time, it was felt that that was not the right time to release the song. Now, and I don't want to speak for what's going to be on the next album because we have seriously not discussed what's going to be on that. But I have a feeling because of the success of Billie Jean Poison and certain songs that we've recorded, that we've done live now that have gotten a positive reaction, that we can go back to Atlantic or our management and whoever and say, hey, I've got a good feeling that this is going to do well on the album. So a lot of it is just guesswork, you know, what we think is going to work, what they think is going to work. You know, we would like to say it's scientific, There are hearts that are broken when certain songs don't make the album. There are even when we do a live performance like PBS, there are songs that might not necessarily see from that. You know, these songs are, you know, we spend a lot of time performing them. There's certain guys that sing the solos on them. And with 10 different sets of ears, you know, even though we're listening on those in-ear monitors that allow us to hear everything, people hear it differently. Some people think that some things either working or not working better than others. So it's always a very interesting and trying scenario. And that said, again, it's about the coolest thing ever. Because once the CD tracks are locked down, that stress of, okay, should have this song have been on or not, is over. And now we have the CD. We have something that we can go to people with and be like, this is our best foot forward. This is what we decided to put out there. And I wish we could do more CDs. I wish we had time that we were on the road for 180 days or whatever it was this year, that we can sit down in the studio more often and do it. Because I know that that's what, on a daily basis, what I listen to, what I know fans listen to, that's what they know Straight No Chaser as, unless they're constantly on YouTube. They're knowing us as the songs that are played on those albums. It's just the most convenient way to listen on your iPod or in the car or whatever. So I wish we had more of those so that people could hear all of the stuff that we recorded, because there's nothing that we record that I'd say that we're not proud of. There's songs we like better than others, but hey, I'm rambling.
How do you choose which members solo a certain song? I mean, that's got to be another one of those gray areas.
Yeah. Seggy has an intro now for Donde. I don't know if anybody's heard it recently, but he goes, for Donde Esta Santa Claus. I don't know if we can the short vernacular, but he gets up there and goes, you know, a lot of people wonder how our solos are chosen for this group. And usually what we do is we go, here you go, Mike and Jerome, have fun. And then he goes on to say, but on this next song, I've scored me one of my own. And he goes from there, because he's singing solo on Donde Esta Santa Claus. The solos are something that can happen as early as, hey, what do you guys think about Mike Lugavill doing a particular solo on this song? Or Jerome will come up and be like, you know, sing the opening line of Wonderwall and be like, do you think we can do an arrangement of this? And it's like, yeah, we can do an arrangement. So sometimes it's the other way around. Sometimes, we have a rule in the group, and it's called the no friends rules, where we are all obviously friends and we all want to have a chance to be out there and to showcase ourselves. But we need to put the best foot forward. And we need to represent the song the best as it can, and that's difficult. The decision usually lies on the arranger's shoulders. Tyler arranges a song like Chicken Fried. He's the one that said, I think Charlie would do best on this. I think these are the trio guys. Ryan arranged The Living Years, and he said, hey, I think I'll do the best on this song. So, you know, and sometimes you arrange a song just knowing that, hey, I better arrange this because I don't think I'm going to get a chance to sing a solo on this album. So we've been doing this long enough that when we hear a soloist, it's tough not to lean towards guys like Rome and guys like Mike Lugavill, because even, you know, I know that fans feel this way, but as members of the group, we're awestruck by their solo voices. It's fantastic that the two of them wandered into Indiana University's campus and became members of this group, and we're very fortunate. Not to say that Ryan, Tyler, I'm going to put Charlie in there, Don, you know, everyone in the group can cover a solo. I mean, we're all singers, hopefully. I mean, we're doing this for a profession now. It's difficult for some guys because there's different ways that different guys shine. Charlie doesn't sing a ton of solos, but Charlie on stage is Charlie. Charlie is a show within himself. So
yes,
Charlie's way to shine. Charlie's way to shine might not be singing like a prayer, but Charlie gets just as much of, makes his impact felt on the group, on the crowd, just as much by doing his intro before the cartoon movie. So, you know, there's moments for all of us to shine. I don't necessarily feel the need to sing solos I'm very confident in my solo voice, but I don't feel the need to do it because I know that I'm getting recognition as being the musical director of the group. And that's enough for me. And I think that guys like Roman and Mike would say that they don't necessarily need to sing 1,000 solos in the show. It just so happens on certain songs that as an arranger, when we did Hark the Herald, it was, you know, we were wondering who should sing the duet on it. And as soon as Mike and Rome sang it the first time, it was, for us, it was like, oh my gosh, that is beautiful. It just comes like that. Sometimes someone else will start with a solo and it gets passed. Example, we did, what the heck is that called? Track 2 on With a Twist is called Don't Dream It's Over. And originally Jerome tracked the solo on it, and Ryan went in there and tried it himself, and we all liked the feel of it better. And, you know, there's been solos that we track. We've had guys sing entire solos. Initially, we were going to have Tyler sing the whole solo on Joy to the World, and then we chopped it up with Ryan and myself. So these are all little S&C fun facts that I should be putting up on Twitter right now. But, by the way, that's SNC Walt at Twitter, you know, in case you're wondering out there. if you're following the fan chat, you're probably already a follower of myself. But yeah, feel free at any time to unfollow Ryan's songs at Twitter. Because Ryan likes to lie a lot. I don't know if people know that, but Ryan is a liar. So if you want to follow a liar on Twitter, then feel free. But if you want a guy that adds a lot of humor and insight to the Straight No Chaser world, then at S&C Walt is your man. So.
Oh, my goodness. Oh,
I can't wait till he hears that. That's going to drive Ryan crazy.
Okay. So how in the world did you get the nickname Fatty, and where did SpongeWalt come from?
SpongeWalt's easy. SpongeWalt's totally from Chasers. That's from you guys. No one has ever called me SpongeWalt besides someone who is a fan of Straight Edge Chaser. When we were doing the sitcom medley, middle of last tour, I started talking to guys that I was going to do the cartoon medley. So I started arranging songs, and I said, we should definitely do SpongeBob in there. So one night, Charlie being, you know how we used to, I don't know if you've seen it, but we used to do Cheers, where Charlie would go, hey, Walt, why don't you lead the crowd in singing Cheers? Yeah. And I would do the Cheers theme song, and everybody gets singing, and then everybody would forget the words on the second part of the chorus. It was a good bit. One night, Charlie, unbeknownst to me, said, Walt, why don't you give me your favorite cartoon theme song? And I go, the heck are you doing, man? He goes, you know, the one with the sponge. I was like, are you kidding me? And I didn't even know. I, at that point, I really didn't know. I kind of knew the melody, but I just knew that we needed to do that theme song. So I did it, and everyone in the crowd sang back at me the first time. I was like, whoa. I was like, we got something here. So then I was like, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to do that, Charlie. No more Cheers. We're going to do this every show. And then by the end of last tour, like I got from unnamed people when I was in Los Angeles and other places, I've been getting SpongeBob gifts everywhere that I go. So, and of course, we cannot forget Blame Carla. Carla, who gave me my T-shirt, for people I know, she's a T-shirt lady. She brings T-shirts to us in the group, and they're fantastic. She gave two more out to Seggy and Ryan the other day they need to be up on Facebook at right now. But mine was a picture. It was SpongeBob with my face superimposed. And I loved it. I said, Carla, you have to send me the JPEG because I want to use that. And if you go to my Twitter account, it's still there. It's been like, it's one of people. I have friends who haven't seen, you know, friends from high school who I haven't kept in contact with. I have no idea what's going on with the group. I had one of them, and he was just like, dude, what is up with this SpongeBob thing, man? That's kind of creepy to see your face. I go, no, it's the coolest thing ever. I had a fan from the group that I'm in right now. They made this, I want to keep, and they're like, all right, man, whatever you say. So, it kind of fits my personality. I think SpongeBob is a total spaz, and he's short and stocky, and he likes to wear, you know, slacks and a tie, and I think that, you know, I'm kind of goofy like SpongeBob, so it worked out pretty well. Now, part two, where did Fatty come from? This is sometimes it seems to offend people, you know, the actual nickname, and I want to set the record straight one time here. If you've skipped ahead and skipped all my boring stuff talking about the original group, this is the part of the podcast I hope you're listening to. Fatty. Fatty is a derivative of all of the guys in the original 10 group having fat names, as in DR is a Star Trek fan. So we used to call him Bubba Fat instead of Bubba Fett. This is not going to seem funny to anybody, but I'm just giving you the background on this. I'm blanking on some of the other ones, and some of them are not they're not good to say on a family podcast. Anyway, we all had different fat names. Dan was called the original Fat because he was the one that gave out all of these fat names. I don't know why we did it. It was mostly because when we were in college, we were just gorging ourselves all the time. So it just was just like, oh, hey, you know, fat kid eating a little food. You know, it's just like talking, kind of telling each other, hey, you know, why don't you put the breadsticks down type of thing. But that's not why I'm nicknamed Fatty. Fatty is one night I had a, it's kind of like the Jerry Maguire, I had a thesis that I needed to write. And fatty is a mindset, okay? Everyone has a fatty moment, and the best example of that is Super Bowl Sunday, okay? On Super Bowl, for some reason, everybody goes to someone else's house or they watch it at home. That's fine. You're watching the game. That's the one thing everybody does. The second thing everybody does is everybody stuffs their face with anything that's not stapled down to the ground, and that's a true fact, unless you're, you know, on some kind of crazy diet, if you're doing P90X during the Super Bowl or something like that. I myself will find my favorite wing place, my favorite pizza place. I'll find my favorite chips and dip and salsa and soda and anything else that I can possibly. And that is my, I consider the Super Bowl Sunday the national holiday for fatty. And it's not me. It's the other day that most people would think of as a mindset for fatty is Thanksgiving. Yeah. On Thanksgiving, for some reason, you lose all logic of how much you can possibly eat, and you just go to town. So that is where fatty comes from, and that for me kind of crosses over into all parts of my life. I am trying to constantly push the levels of humor. Of, you know, just trying, you know, with my sports fandom, with, you know, my love for the New York Mets, you know, it's constantly trying to just be as gluttonous as possible and to be living life to the fullest. And that is what fatty means. Fatty has nothing to do with the fact that I'm one of the shorter, stoutier guys in the group. Maybe it does, and maybe these guys are just playing a cruel trick on me all these years, but for me, and what I tell my psychiatrist,
Oh man!
Got that, everybody?
Love it. Setting the record straight.
I can give shorter answers if you guys want. I'm realizing that I'm really babbling here. But.
No, it's fine.
Okay.
Okay. So, how did the New Year's Eve Reading concert come about? And why did you guys want to do something like this for the fans?
New Year's Eve had been a brainchild now for 3 years, and there had been a few other thought ideas that ended up not being, it wasn't the right time, it wasn't the right place, it just wasn't supposed to happen. Reading came together quickly, and it was something that we all agreed on immediately that we should do. We're obviously close friends. The opportunity for us to spend, even though we've been spending the past 4 months together, and if I see Ryan and you know in the hallway, I'd want to just tackle him and tell him I don't want to see him again for a little while. I'm kidding. But us spending New Year's Eve together with our significant others, our family, no matter where in the world it is something that we are incredibly excited to do. And some of us usually do. I'm usually around DR on New Year's. He's probably my best friend, and I live with him. He's in New York. You know, he's very close with my wife. So, you know, DR, I'm around a lot on New Year's. I've been around Steve Morgan and Charlie and a lot of guys. You know, the Chicago guys always get together for New Year's. You know, so it's us being together on New Year's is fantastic. Now, for the fans part of it, we were not sure if people would want to come out and spend New Year's with us. And I know that might sound kind of coy, but the fact is my tradition on New Year's is to spend it with my friends, and I don't really like making a big stink. I know some people go to bars and spend a lot of money and do stuff, but for me, New Year's is a very almost private thing. I like to be with just a couple of people. So the idea of going to an arena and watching Straight No Chaser perform, to me, seemed like I've never seen a concert on New Year's, and I know that a lot of people perform on New Year's. I'm finding this out more and more that some bands have played New Year's for the past 30 years and stuff. So it's great. Maybe we'll start doing this too. And the fact that we had been, I'll just put all the cards on the table. The fact that we've played, this will now be our eighth show this tour in Pennsylvania, which is the most of any state. I was like, who's going to want to come see us again? Like, I mean, like, really? Like, you know, I know you like Gaga, but you want to see it? You really want to come see us again? So the fact that now the thing is almost sold out, to me, is probably the craziest thing that's happened on tour here so far. And again, like, this is coming just for me. I'm flabbergasted and more humbled than I've been at anything else that we've done, that so many people are coming out there. Now, with that said, once that happened and once we realized that this was going to be something that was going to be special, we decided to pull out all the stops. And what we decided to do is we're pulling back some of our songs from the old repertoire. We're not doing the entire show. I sent a tweet, and people are like, oh, you're going to do, like, 30 songs from back in college? Like, no, that show would be pretty lousy, actually. most of our best stuff is the stuff, obviously, we're doing now. I mean, you know, why would we be saving anything? So, but some of those little hidden gem songs that we haven't sung, literally, haven't sung in 10 years, and we've been practicing in soundcheck, and wow, it's like, I don't sing tenor on this song. I sing baritone on this song, like that kind of moment, you know? Or, you know, people, you know, guys from the younger groups are like, well, we used to cut this verse out of the song. Or, oh, well, I used to sing solo on this. And then another guy's like, well, when I was in the group, I used to sing solo. So it's very interesting. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of rock, paper, scissors for solos for these songs. But we're going to be pulling back songs from our days in Indiana. I'm not going to tell you what songs they are yet, but we are probably more excited to sing these songs than maybe what our fans would be, because they're just, you know, they're good memories and old stories with a lot of these songs. So, you know, somebody asked if we're going to have this on the web so you can watch it. Unfortunately, that's not going to be possible with the arena and the way things work this year. Hopefully in the future, I'm not promising anything, but we will look to plan that out, because we understand that we're doing one show on New Year's, and it's going to be on the East Coast, and we apologize to anybody that's not being able to make it there. Also, the ticket prices, because there's, you know, it's in an arena, they're charging more. So it's, for us, it's bittersweet, because we would like to do one big, you know, show right in the middle of the country, and, you know, be able to do it maybe a couple of nights, you know, a couple of New Year's Eve nights, I guess, but whatever. But I'm excited about it. Most of my family's going to be there, because Reading is only about an hour away from Easton and Allentown. So it should be a good time for sure.
Oh, I wish I could be there.
I'm sorry.
All right. So since we're hashing out rumors and whatnot on the podcast, it is rumored that you are a huge fantasy sports fan.
Fantasy sports.
Yes. If you were offered the chance to grace the field with your favorite team, what team would it be, and what position would you play?
Well, it probably wouldn't be a huge contact sport, because I'm not a wuss, but I would definitely get hurt if I played for the Eagles. You know, even if I was a place kicker, you know, that there'd be some way somebody would collide into me, and that would be the end of my a cappella career, because I couldn't walk. I am an enormous New York Mets fan. I apologize. I apologize to myself, really, because the New York Mets aren't very good right now. But, I am an enormous baseball fan. I follow baseball like crazy. Even when football season, I'm constantly following baseball. So I would say if I had to play for any team, it would be for the Mets. Now, what position I would play would be tough, because that means that I would be, you know, taking the position of one of my favorite players. So I wouldn't play third, because I want David Wright to be on the field with me. I wouldn't pitch because I'd want Johan Santana to be on the field with me. I'd probably play second because you don't get a lot of balls hit to you at second base, and most of the second basemen are short, and second basemen are usually, unless you're Chase Utley or Robinson Cano, you're not usually the strongest hitting player on the field. So I don't want to catch because I would probably miss most of the balls thrown at me. But if I could play one, Billy Crystal got to play an exhibition game with the Yankees because he just for years just was refuted to be the greatest Yankee fan alive. And I would like somehow or another my time in Strano Chaser to lead me to enough popularity so that people can learn how much of a New York Mets fan I am and how much of a baseball fan I am. So, but fantasy sports is, you know, this is something that all of the guys in the group are into. We all have our own fantasy football league that we're a part of that has no gambling involved. It's just the 10 of us. Actually, not the 10 of us. Randy doesn't play in the league. Randy is actually anti-fantasy. He really, really detests when the 9 of us are sitting around talking about it. You can see his eyes rolling back into his head 2 or 3 times over. I feel terrible for Randy in that sense. And then we have 3 guys outside of the group. I won't say who they are, but they are part of the group as well of fantasy. I will say this, just for the record, I finished dead last in fantasy football this year. Yes, I said it. Now, I am a superior fantasy baseball player to any of these guys, and as much as it would strain them to say, I am, they would vouch for that. But and I'm a pretty good fantasy football player, but I finished dead last, 12 out of 12 this year, and my pride is hurt, and I feel ashamed, and I apologize to any of the fans of the Fatty franchise football team around.
Okay, on a completely different note, since you're one of the key arrangers in the group, can you tell us what songs you've arranged and how you picked songs to arrange?
I've arranged a lot of songs from when I was, you know, back in high school through Strano Chaser in college. I was in another group in college called Delusions of Grandeur with my good friend Don Nottingham. He was an original member of Delusions of Grandeur as well. They're a 6-guy group, a comedy group. I arranged a lot of stuff for them as well. And then I've arranged, when I graduated, I arranged for the current group. I arranged for Ladies First. I arranged for groups all around the country. I'm not a freckle on Deke Sharon's resume of how much he's arranged, but Deke's you know, library is in the thousands, and mine's are probably in the hundreds. But I've arranged stuff also for cruise ship bands, for artists. There's a group that just came off of the show America's Got Talent called the Texas Tenors. They are 2 of the 3 guys are very good friends of mine, and I've been arranging most of their show the past 2 or 3 years. So I've, you know, do projects outside the group as well. But Strano Chaser stuff. I guess some of the more popular arrangements out there right now, I arranged Fix You. I arranged Joy to the World. I arranged the Christmas Can-Can. I did some arranging on 12 Days, not the Africa part. Dan did the Africa part, but on the initial part of that. Blanking some of my other favorite ones: O Holy Night, O Lang Syne. What else? Stuff that hasn't been on albums yet. The Gaga arrangement I did. A lot of the stuff we did in Atlantic City, Staying Alive, Superstition, some 5. So I think that's enough. They all have very different characters, and some have gone better than others, and the songs that I didn't mention are some of the songs that didn't work. You know, there's every 2 songs I do, 3 of them are, wait, for every 3 songs I do, 2 of them work. You know, one of those might be better than the others, and the other one is, let's never speak of that one again. how do I pick the songs? A lot of times there's suggestions. A lot of times you find, make this a long story short, there's songs that are a cappella friendly, as we'll call it. You hear a song that has a feel or a sound that sounds like something that we could pull off. There's certain particular types of music that will not work, or could work, but it would take a lot of meandering. Heavy hip-hop songs do not work with an a cappella group. heavy, hard rock songs do not work. And then there's just some songs that don't really fit into our, you know, our demographic or our, into our, you know, what we like to sing. You know, that's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Picking the songs and figuring out what songs are going to work is complete mind game. It, you never, ever, ever know what's going to work. You can have the greatest ambitions for songs, put together an arrangement that sounds good on paper, sounds good when we demo it. We get there and do it. We sing it for a crowd, and we're like, wow, that did not work. And then it's other
mm-hmm.
songs that just come out of nowhere, that come out of left field, that just go crazy. And I'll say 12 Days was one of those. When we did 12 Days at school, we were just throwing it in as an extra holiday song that we were doing at our holiday concert. And the reaction was something else. And obviously the viral reaction was something
mm-hmm.
else. And now they locked the doors to the venue until we sing 12 Days at the end of the show. So.
Wow. Cool.
Wow. Okay. So of the current songs you guys perform right now, which songs would you like to see on the next Straight No Chaser album? And do you have any ideas for an album title, perhaps?
We do have a concept for the album. We're not going to talk about it yet. It is cool. And then the reason why I'm not going to say that it's not, we're not going to talk about it yet is because we don't always have the final say on things. It's got to go through a gauntlet of people at record label, at our management. There's a lot of people it's got to go through. But the concept that we have, we think is lights out, and we think that our fans are going to go crazy about. So that being said, songs on the next album. Over the next 2 months, during my quote-unquote free time, I'm going to be arranging around the clock. So Twitter friends out there, tweet me ideas, nothing too crazy. I love doing mashups. If you think you got two mashups, keep it to songs that you think your parents, if you're a child or, you know, a younger person, songs that you
like
think your parents would enjoy or recognize. Or if you're an adult, songs that you think are universal, songs that you think everyone, if they came to it, there's exceptions. We do a song like Man Who Can't Be Moved that was very obscure at the time. It's now more
mm-hmm.
popular now. But the types of songs we like to do are universal to a large audience. So if you have ideas, tweet me. I would be more than happy to listen to ideas. Songs that we're currently doing, I don't want to tip the hat again because I don't want to say a song that I really think that should be on the album that doesn't end up on the album. But I have a pretty good feeling that we will be doing a recording of Gaga, that we'll be doing a recording of Like a Prayer, and I don't know, shout out some other songs.
Those are the ones I was thinking.
You're thinking, okay.
Yeah.
I was hoping for Billie Jean.
Billie Jean, I'm Grapevine, I'm sure we will get in the studio and at least record those songs, whether or not they make the cut or not is another story. But there are, I'd say, five or six songs that are on the and past recorded songs that have gotten new light that will be considered for the next album.
Cool.
Nice.
Cool.
Okay, so this really isn't a question, but can I just say that the faces that you make in your Straight No Chaser photos are hilarious? Seriously, my favorite is like your gangster face. Is this something you always do, or are you just kind of letting your personality shine there a bit? Because I love them. I love it.
All right. So this is I'll say that this is something that not necessarily everyone in the group likes that happens, okay? we do sound lines after every show. We meet hundreds of people a night, and this is all something that I'm very excited about. We take photos with, a lot of different people. And one of the things that it's at the end of the show, you're usually most tired, kind of like getting out your steam. And one of the things that I like to do is, you know, instead of all of us just having, you know, boring, smiling faces up there, what if you were looking through your pictures the next day or if it was posted on Facebook and you look in the back and you're like, yo, what is that one guy doing in the back there? Like I never want to do anything that is can be considered obscene my thinking is that if somebody was going through 100 different pictures of me taking shots, that you would probably see 70 or 80 of the same smiles on 9 of the 10 guys' faces. that one guy in the back is doing something interesting. Now, I have been told by Facebook messaging that I have ruined pictures for people. I wanted to get a picture with the 10 of you guys, and you're back there making some face with your tongue sticking out. I was just like, oh, really? I'm sorry. So it is a guilty pleasure of mine, one that I've been asked by certain guys in the group not to do. So if I don't do it that much anymore, it's because there's some guys in the group that aren't as much fun as I am, and I won't name any names. But I will, especially when I am around you, Tina, I will make sure to give the most gangsta face that I can roll out there. And, you know, who knows? Maybe this will be something that will catch on like wildfire, and everyone in the group will have a little bit more fun in doing that. Until then, I'm going to keep that as my MO, as the thing that people know me as, is the dreidel guy and the guy that makes weird faces. And
and gangster wall strikes again.
Yes.
Okay, so Walt, what do you think, what do you personally think it is about Straight and a Chase with the group that draws such a loyal fan base?
Well, you four would probably be able to answer that better than myself. You know, I don't know what, I mean, we're real guys. I don't know if that makes any sense. It's not something that is something that's been contrived by a record label or it's not like our manager comes or calls us every day and goes, "Hey guys, remember, you're just 10 guys in Midland, Indiana, and you're a bunch of friends, and just have fun out there." You know, like, it really is, you know, there's not much of a filter between us and the crowd. Our music's universal. I guess that's the one thing that I would say is not contrived, but it's done on purpose. We're not trying to, like, just hit the younger fans. We're not just, as soon as Bruno Mars puts out, so, "Oh, we got to do that," you know, which I would love to do a Bruno Mars song, but we're not out there doing like 50s doo-wop just because we know it sounds good and that, you know, my grandparents, my parents, and then younger folks will be like, "Oh, well, those guys, you know, they at least look good up there doing it." You know what I mean? So, you know, it's, we're just us. And that's how this all started. It was a video that we just put up. It wasn't like a record label found us and said, "Hey, I'm going to find a way to make this video viral. I've got to," it was Randy putting a video up for us to see, us saying, "Oh, that looks cool," and then getting phone calls saying that we're getting signed to a record deal. That's how it started. That's how things go on. If anything ever changed with the 10 of us, I think that we would be the most disappointed, because that's just how it is. And I think I really, if I had to put a guess out there of why our fan base is loyal, and our fan base is loyal, and we appreciate every person that reaches out to us and tells us how we've impacted them. I lost my train of thought, but I'm so excited about our fans, and I really hope that we can continue to bring in new chasers and continue to just be the way we are.
Well, you kind of already answered this, but I'll ask it again just in case. So since this is the SMC fan chat, I wanted to ask a fan-related question. How have Straight No Chasers fans impacted you personally? And do you have any memorable fan experiences that you'd like to share? Anything fun or kooky or just plain out there?
So you want something weird is what you're saying here? I get our fans are – we portray a very – outgoing, boisterous type of personality, but occasionally that comes back to us in inappropriate ways. We were in Windsor the other day. We were at a meet and greet, and we had a fan who very blatantly, loudly, in front of a room full of mostly older, you know, people, tell us to take our shirts off. Okay? Now,
wow.
As you know, that's just inappropriate. You know, and that's something that we got a chuckle out of. As soon as we went back, we got a great chuckle out of that was like, "Wow, that lady was crazy." But like, you know, we've gotten interesting requests. Being a music director, I have very, very random songs that people want us to arrange. Somebody said, "You know what? If you guys did the Ghostbusters song, I think that would go over crazy. You close the show with it." And it wasn't only the fact that they recommended Ghostbusters, which if we ever did a music, a movie theme medley, which might be next, if we ever did a Ghostbusters, would probably be one of the top two. But they not only said you should do the Ghostbusters theme, they added on the end of it, you should close the show with it. Like, I'm writing the set list for you right now. Whatever you got, I know you haven't, you know, but it should close the show.
Wow.
So those are my favorite things. A lot of different, there's a lot of different talents that come to our show. And there's some people that, talent-wise, would match the opening of American Idol, where they show kind of the blooper reel. We had a woman that came up to us and out of nowhere just started singing an aria, like, in the middle of a signing line. And it was fantastic because she was singing for us, you know, and it was pretty cool. I will say that she was not a good singer, and I'm not trying to be rude here, but it was like it was just very uncomfortable. And so I'm not saying you can't sing for us. We love when people come up and especially groups from other colleges or other high school groups, they sing for us. It's fantastic because we were there and I. With my group Delusions, when we were in college, we walked up and sang to Rockapella, and I'm sure they rolled their eyes. You know what I mean? So, like, you know, I'm sure they're like, great, another six-guy group. These guys are terrible, you know, kind of, you know. So, how have the SNC fans impacted me personally? The fans of Straight No Chaser have changed my life. I consider the people who looked at the 12 Days video, whether they were just floating around at work and got a chuckle out of it and forward it to somebody else, I consider them fans, whether they like it or not. So them from people from a very distant point of view, from the YouTube followers, have changed my life. Everything is different about from my daily life to the fact that I'm a professional musician and that I am around my best friends every day. There's not much more, and on a negative point, I'm away from my wife for a lot. But as you know, SNC fans have definitely changed my life. As in, the Chasers, you four, the people who come to us after shows and tell us their stories. I know it's cliche to say, but if you really just stay in the moment and listen to what people are saying, you realize that you are actually part of something special. And that's rare. You know, you have special relationships, like relationships with everybody has relationships with their families, whether it's good or bad or whatever it is. Everybody has relationships with their friends or with loved ones. It's hard to find. There's not a lot of people that have relationships with complete strangers like you can have in music or in, you know, film or whatever it is. And I never wanted to be a performer. I was totally fine, you know, writing music and doing that kind of thing and having other people get sort of that praise. But maybe I might have changed my mind if I knew the kind of awe that I feel for how, on a nightly basis, even if it's one person saying something to me, how I'm connecting with them. And I feel blessed. I feel like the 10 of us have been given a gift that is rare, and I hope that if that comes across, if we're ever on the road and you see one of us kind of tired or something, just know that it's just that our body is there and not our mind. Like, I really hope that our fans always continue to know how grateful we are for everything. And the fact that there's a fan chat now that voices that, you know, a place for our fans to come together and talk and you know, have a common ground is something I never thought would happen. This whole thing is something I never thought would happen. And I really, really appreciate the work you guys do in helping to promote the group it's a true blessing. And happy holidays to you guys.
You too. Aww.
Thanks, Walt. Thank you so much for such a great interview. We've had such a great time talking with you.
Thanks.
Just one quick thing before you leave, though. Do you have anything you want to say to the fans who are listening to the podcast right now?
I'm sure you're going to go over this in your news and such, but fans of Straight No Chaser know that we are in Redding, Pennsylvania on, who said Redding, California. We're Redding, Pennsylvania on New Year's Eve. Tickets are available on our website, smcmusic.com. Our friends up north in Canada, we're going to be playing the Hot Winter Tour from February 6th through February 20th in hot, warm places at, north of the border. Come check us out. If you have a friend that is in Canada and you think they might enjoy Straight No Chaser, tell them that we'll be out in full force wearing a lot of North Face and Patagonia gear. So, and just thank you again. I hope that you continue to follow the fan chat and to follow Straight No Chaser, and feel free to hit us up on Twitter, Facebook anytime. And that's it. Thank you guys so much for letting me talk.
Thank you, Walt, for taking the time out of your hectic schedule to talk.
Sure.
Thank you, Walt. It's been a real pleasure.
Oh, thanks, Walt. Thank you so much. This has been a great interview. Thank you so much.
Hey, what a great interview, guys.
It was so much fun. And I really, really loved all the jabs that Walter put in against Ryan. I was trying so hard not to burst out laughing. Well, I kind of let myself loose a couple of times, but yeah, it was so funny.
It was definitely funny. And, you know, this isn't a challenge or anything, Ryan Allwirt, but if you're listening, if you would like the opportunity to publicly clear your name, our lines are always open.
Oh,
yeah.
Tina and Shana, you know he's listening. You know he's listening.
I don't want to start any drama or anything, and I'm just saying.
I'm thinking this might be a good thing that we recording this episode and putting it out after they did their tour, because something tells me there might be a little showdown.
Brotherly love.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. Brotherly love between the two of them.
Maybe one of the guys will go to the single bus. So now, you all might be a little confused, since I did introduce myself, you know, at the beginning of the interview, and then I was silent through the rest of the part. Well, yeah, I was kind of partying up. I had a company Christmas party I had to go to, and I just couldn't make it, fans. But you know what? Shana, Kathy, and Tina did such a marvelous job, and so I don't think you missed me too bad.
Hey, Dave, did you have some eggnog for us?
Actually, there was no eggnog, but there was plenty of rum, and my favorite Jack Daniels was in attendance to the party. Listeners, what did you think about Waller's words of wisdom? Be sure to send us an email at smcfanchat@gmail.com and tell us what you think, okay?
Yeah, Allison, tell us that you unfollowed Ryan. I'd like to hear about that, too. I'd really like to hear about that.
Poor Ryan. He's going to be adopting his followers.
Well, he's going to be right. We're unbiased.
Well, we'll see. All right, so that concludes our first part, our first big chunk of the SNC Fan Chat podcast, episode 10. But you can catch our second part, episode 10, part 2, wherever you got this part of the podcast. And make sure that you check it out, because we have a lot of news to cover. And we also announce our winner for our All I Want for Christmas CD DVD box set giveaway. So that is not something that you're going to want to miss. So be sure to tune in to our second part. We'll see you right over there soon. Bye.
Yeah, be there. See ya.
So Shana, Kathy, Dave, and Tina ready to go. S&C Fan Chat, time for the show.